And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
It's live. It's local. It's the Dale Jackson Show on News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM. WVNN online at WVNN.com and on your smartphone on iHeartRadio.
News Talk 770 AM 92.5 FM WVNN News Time 7:06 here on your Monday morning. Good morning, everybody. Dale Jackson here. We are continuing to watch and see what happens at the Supreme Court. That should happen around 9 o'clock. I'm sure Chris Plant will talk to you about that. Now on the line with us right now, we have from Troy University, Scott Boyer. He joins us to talk about defined pensions, defined benefits, defined contributions. We've talked about this a lot here on the Dale Jackson Show because I think it's an important issue. You will hear repeatedly from those involved in state government, especially those receiving defined benefit pension plans, that everything's fine. Don't worry. Everything's going to be all right. It's not broke. We'll continue to get our money, at which point I will say, that's really not the point. We know you're going to get your money. We understand that. The problem is the system itself is kind of broke, and even though you're going to get your money, the system isn't performing well enough to provide it without more money from the state government. This is the bigger, larger problem. Let's bring on someone who knows a lot more about this stuff than I do. Scott Boyer, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Good morning, Dale.
Talk to me just before we get into this. You are the chair of economics and finance of the economics and finance division and the director of the Johnson Center at Troy University. Talk to us real quick about what exactly is happening in the pension system, in the retirement systems of Alabama, before we get into this, to your latest column. Talk to me real quick about the bigger problem.
Sure. So we released a study a few weeks ago showing that the true liability that taxpayers in Alabama face from our pension systems, ERS, teachers' retirement system, and the judicial system, is actually about four times as large as what the RSA reports. They get away with this through some really faulty accounting, but the liability taxpayers in Alabama face is about $60 billion instead of the $15 billion reported. If that's right, and we think there's really good reason to think it's right, that's basically asking Alabamians, every single one of them, including children, to write a $12,000 check to the public sector employees in the state. The 300,000 employees need $12,000 from each and every person to make the system whole. And this is something we feel like isn't really being reported. And when you tell this to the RSA, they essentially say, no, everything's just fine.
And really, that's it. I mean, I wish you would go further, but that's essentially it. They say, no, everything's cool. Don't worry about it. Oh, by the way, $1 billion, please, from the general fund. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. And every year they're having to make up more ground, and it doesn't seem to be getting any better. But they continue to say, no, everything's fine. And I think, Dr. Boyer, I think it appears to me that everyone's just like, hey, look, as of right now, it's fine that we continue to pump into it. We'll all be dead before this all falls apart anyway, so what's the big deal? I mean, honestly, I hate to say it that way, but is that not it?
Yeah, you know, it's something that is time's working against us, essentially. You know, and if you look at the last 4 years, they'll boast about really high investment performance in the double digits, you know, up in the 18 to 20% range in terms of returns. If you look at funding ratios, which is the standard for measuring the health of a pension system, they keep declining, which means that we're paying way more out than we're making on investment returns. So it doesn't matter, in some sense, whether the people running RSA are geniuses. We've made so many commitments to so many people that the money just isn't there. And that's kind of the bottom line of public sector pensions here and across the country.
Yeah, and we're seeing people get away from the defined benefit plans and move to defined contributions, where your money works with the markets and investments and otherwise, as opposed to, hey, just throw money in this hole and you'll get this much back. So they're working on getting away from those. In Alabama, we haven't done a very good job, but we've talked about it a lot. I think we're going to see a continued move down that path. We have to, because there is really no other way. I mean, the simple fact is we're completely boned on this issue anyway. It's just going to be determined how boned we are by how far we keep going down this path.
You're absolutely right. You know, so the question is, do we want to have some control over the process, or do you want it to get away from you, where you're just simply telling people your benefits are going to have to be cut? In Chicago right now, this is a city-level example, employees are being told, look forward to a 29% increase in your payments to the system. That's huge, and that's the result of not taking action over a long period of time. So there are states, and the private sector is an obvious example to point to of what happens if you don't take action and what happens when you do. Private sector employees are primarily in defined contribution plans. You own them. You take them with you. There are a lot of aspects of these plans that are really good. One thing I mentioned in my piece last week is that defined contribution plans allow individuals to basically build a nest egg and pass it on. There's no inheritability to the Social Security system or public sector pension.
That's actually a really good point. It really is. My mother, 62 or 3 years old, a public school teacher, defined contribution plan. She has her own savings, obviously, but you're right. When she passes away, if she was to die tomorrow, all the years she spent investing in that plan would have been for nothing, because she only got 3 years out of it. I mean, I think that's it's a really interesting point. All right, so let's talk here about the gist. And I know you wrote this for AL.com. You probably didn't come up with the headline. But the headline, defined benefit pensions are anti-poor. Now, you just mentioned one of the reasons right there. If you're a public sector employee, maybe you don't have a ton of savings. At the end of your time in the public sector, you have a heart attack the next day. Boom, everything you put into that system is completely gone.
Exactly. So if you look at data on low-skilled individuals, and low-skilled individuals are generally poor individuals as well, their life expectancies are much shorter. So someone, say, living in Appalachia, who's poor and low-skilled, lives to only be about 65, 67 years old. They have a life expectancy comparable to someone in Iraq, by the way. If you live in Northern Virginia, you can look forward to living into your 80s. That's a huge difference in terms of the benefits you're going to get out. And that person in Appalachia, by the way, started working probably in their teens, whereas someone in Northern Virginia went to graduate school and didn't get going until their mid to late 20s. So the benefits paid in by that person could have accumulated a lot longer, and, you know, they could have passed it along to their poor children in Appalachia, too. You don't have that in Social Security. You certainly don't have that in the RSA as well. And that's kind of a point that both left and right agree on. Paul Krugman has written about this, saying, and he's as left as they get, he's written about this, saying this is really, really bad for the poor, and we shouldn't raise retirement ages for the poor, and a lot of other problems that are inherent with a defined benefit system. You're betting on luck and living long, essentially, if you believe in that kind of system.
Well, and, you know, the interesting part about this, if you have this defined benefit plan, if you live forever, it's a pretty sweet deal. If you don't,
exactly.
if you don't live forever, you're kind of getting the screw job, and I think that's pretty much what these guys are gambling on. And everyone wants to live forever, so you're not going to say, "Well, I'm going to die when I'm 63, so I'm going to make all the bad decisions in the world with my finances." But I do get the side where you cannot pass it on. It seems like public sectors are the last ones to hang on to this. Private companies, if you'll notice, and I'm sure you've pointed this out before, private companies have said, we can't do these defined benefit plans anymore. They just don't work. It's bankrupting us. It's killing us. And they're getting away from these things. But the public sector unions, they've been able to hang on to this. And I think they've been able to hang on because it's very easy to tie your direct benefit to politicians. So politicians pander to these people.
Absolutely, and that's really the heart of the problem, is that it's a political one. There's also an issue of, if we lift the lid and see what's really going on in these plans, people will just be outraged. So why not just keep trying to mask the problem for a little bit longer. So it's a twofold problem, political and just a lack of transparency by the people in public pension administrations. But there's a breath of fresh air in that many states are moving in that direction. Michigan did it in the 90s. Oklahoma just did it recently. And even in completely crazy places like New Jersey, they're taking action, moving towards defined contribution. So it can be done, but if your head's in the sand and you're not even interested in looking at data, it's really hard to change anything.
Well, we'll continue talking with Dr. Scott Bollier, Troy University. This guy has written some pretty interesting stuff on the defined benefit, defined contribution plans, the retirement systems of Alabama, both on the teacher side and the other side. The system's broke. But we've had 4 years of Republican rule. They've reformed it in the past. Dr. Bollier has talked about those reforms. They don't go far enough, a drop in the bucket. I don't think you're going to be seeing the words "we're boned" in any part of a research document coming from Troy University, but that's my take on the whole thing. We're boned, but we'll be back. We'll continue discussing this. It's the Dale Jackson Show, live and local, News Talk, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Depend on it.
Dale Jackson's House is brought to you by our friends at First Family Mortgage. Let First Family Mortgage help you with your house by calling Conrad today at 425-0105.
News Talk, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN News Time, 722 here on your Monday morning. Lots going on today. We'll hear you about the Hobby Lobby case here at 9 o'clock. Representative Mike Ball joins us at 8 o'clock, so stay tuned for all that. Right now, Scott Bollier, he is with us from Troy University. He's been talking about defined benefit, defined pension plans. All right, the gist of your article, Dr. Bollier, is this. Defined benefit pensions are anti-poor. Explain that to us a little bit.
That's right. So essentially, if you look at data on how the poor are doing under a defined benefit program, and remember, defined benefit is just a promise to pay people when they hit a certain age and they retire. Social Security, it's either 62, 65, or if you want to defer payments even later. Poor people simply aren't living that long. The ones who are working and the working poor who are really trying to get ahead pay into a system all life, and if you look at the data, it's 6.5% on the payer side, 6.5% on the employer side. That's a lot of money from a finance standpoint. If you were saving that much on your own, you'd have a huge nest egg. But they put it all into a system hoping that they can live long enough to get some of the benefits out, and quite often, statistically, they don't. So it's a really bad system. None of their money gets passed on. And their children probably end up growing up in very impoverished homes as well.
Well, you know, the interesting thing, I agree with your bigger point that these systems are broke, but the anti-poor side of this, I think the only way you can make that argument is if the poor are paying the taxes that end up paying for this thing. You wrote the following, I just want to get you to flush this out a little bit. You wrote, "The system sounds outrageous and unbelievable, and liberals should be among the most outraged. A sacred progressive program of theirs is no longer progressive. And easy, obvious solutions that empower the poor through personal accounts are available and have worked in the private sector in some states." But what we also know from your other works is that obviously the money that all these teachers collectively are putting in, and this may be part of the problem, they're getting far more out. On a large scale, they are getting far more. I mean, you said right now the hole is what, $50 or $60 billion, if I remember correctly. So they're getting far more out than they're putting in. Why would they ever change that?
And that's completely fair. So there are many people who are doing very well under the system. The issue is that they're doing well simply because they're fortunate and lucky. You know, and I don't think systems are particularly fair when you're depending on luck for your outcome. You know, so. The benefit of any kind of defined contribution system is, one, you can bring down the total amounts being paid. Like, if you look at RSA right now, people are paying in, combined between employee and employer, about 20% of their income. That's a lot of money to get really lousy results. You could bring down the total amount of payment and still have a person doing just as well in retirement. So what also happens with that is that a person then actually just owns their own fortune as opposed to counting on this pooling of assets.
Interesting. I read these things, and I'm not someone who's a big fan of these programs. But I mean, it's obvious they love these programs because, again, at the end, no matter what happens to the economy, you're going to get that check. And there is no risk to those involved.
That's right. And so the issue is, do we want risk socialized across the state so that everyone's on the hook for 300,000 public sector employees, or do we want to move in the direction of an ownership society and let individuals essentially own their retirements?
All right, people don't like you. Well, you're kind of like me, and I'm sure you have a bunch of people walking around your college campus who are not fond of you, because there are a lot of them that are getting those pensions as well. What's the big criticism besides the absurd Dr. Parker Griffith liberal in my pocket every second Koch brothers argument? What's the pushback on this latest study?
You know, it's really funny because a lot of people read it and actually have the reverse reaction of there's a lot in here that you're absolutely right about. And many of the things that I haven't mentioned in this most recent column are things like the fact that people stay in jobs that they're miserable in. If you're 22 years into your job, you stay till 25 because then you get vested and get all of the benefits from the system. That's outrageous to be in a job you hate for 3 years just to try to make it. You know, and there are many people who I work with who are public sector employees who have reactions like that, you know, that actually the system is really kind of messed up and perverse. So there hasn't been a tremendous amount of pushback. And, you know, a lot of folks think that, you know, it's an argument that needs to be heard.
Now, when you're talking to these people who disagree with you, is it solely status quo? Let's just keep it the way it is. I sure do like this, that at the end of the day, I'm going to have a check there.
You know, it's the ones who disagree are largely ones with a real strong stake in the current system. So if you look at some of the RSA's reaction to our study, they say it's irresponsible and it's fear-mongering. In fact, we think we're just putting data on the table and saying, what's wrong with looking at what we think is the actual scenario, not a worst-case scenario, but the actual scenario we're living. Let's be honest with that and figure out how we should deal with it. Should we be raising taxes even more? Should we be addressing the fact that we've just blown it with the system as a whole?
I'll be honest with you. I do think it is fear-mongering. Because what's happening is really scary. I mean, at the end of the day, someone's going to have to come up with this $60 billion, and every single year that price is just going to get bigger and bigger as time goes on. Do legislators come to you and say, we're going to do something about this?
On pension issues, not so much in our state. I do a lot of work in other states. I was just involved in a big study in Pennsylvania. They, in fact, are embracing the idea of shifting the defined contribution. Here, for reasons that are quite strange, there just isn't that kind of momentum. But many other states are interested in this very kind of argument. This research, Utah has moved in that direction. And we're just way behind the curve. If we want to be an entrepreneurial state like a Texas or, you know, a Georgia, which just won best state for business, we need to be doing things that address some of these huge liabilities and huge problems for taxpayers. Why come to the state if you're going to be on the hook for funding a really unfunded pension system?
Yeah, and what I find amazing is we've had a Republican legislature for 4 years. They've moved sort of in the right direction, but you even call that just baby steps. So I think we're not going to see much movement there. We may see it. Who knows? One more election cycle, maybe they'll be serious about this. Dr. Bollier, Troy University, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. We'll definitely be in touch.
Sounds great. Thanks so much, Dale.
All right, there you go. There's a look at your system, folks. You're paying for it. And it's still billions of dollars in the hole. So get your checkbook out, folks, and enjoy it. Stay tuned. More coming up. Dale Jackson Show, live and local. News Talk, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Depend on it.
It's live. It's local. It's the Dale Jackson Show on News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Listen live online at WVNN.com and on iHeartRadio. Depend on it.
News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. News Time 7:37 here on your Monday morning. Dale Jackson here. Thank you very much for joining us. 8 o'clock, Representative Mike Ball will be on the program with us, and we appreciate him coming on the program every day. We just got done talking with Dr. Scott Moyer from Troy University. The pension program completely screwed. And will we ever do anything about it? We'll see. We'll talk to Mike Ball about that and some other stuff, too. They have done some stuff, no question about it. Is it enough? We'll talk about it. Stay tuned for that. Some other stuff today. We are expecting a ruling in the Hobby Lobby case. Can they refuse to provide 4 out of 20 contraception methods by claiming religious liberty? So we will have a debate over what trumps religious liberty, which is in the first sentence of the First Amendment of the Constitution, or reproductive freedom, which does not exist anywhere, neither in the Constitution nor federal law. But whatever, ignore all of those things. We'll follow that case at 9. On the immigration front, the White House is asking for $2 billion. To increase humanitarian assistance for kids already here. He's also asking Congress to grant broader powers for immigration officials to speed deportations of unaccompanied children caught trying to cross. Meanwhile, hundreds of those kids are going to be transferred to locations in Dallas. And they're looking for facilities to house the kids, including closed schools and other facilities. So while that's happening, the United States military, which we should be placing on the border, has also rushed 75 Hellfire missiles to the Iraqi government. They say that will last them a total of 3 days while they try to take back Tikrit. The Iraqi government ran out of missiles shortly after they chased the troops out of northern Iraq, taking Mosul, Tikrit, and other border posts with Syria. And this weekend, the government made its first concerted effort to take back the territory and is battling ISIS and its Sunni Muslim allies. It's amazing. It's amazing. So we gave them 75 more missiles and said good luck, and then they sent them off on their way. So there's a little bit of breaking news, or not breaking news, but just news of the day and things that are happening. Oh, by the way, I don't know if you saw this or not. I don't know if you saw this yet. But there was another deserter that hasn't got a lot of play. Marine Corporal Wasef Hassoun. He deserted twice, and he's finally turned himself into military authorities after 9 years on the run. In 2004, he disappeared in Iraq, and though he claimed he was kidnapped by Iraqi militants, he was later charged as a deserter, sent back to the United States, and then before they put him on trial, he got up and he ran away. And he'd been gone for 9 years. He is a deserter. He is what he is. And there's really nothing we can do about that. But they will continue to monitor him. E-cigarettes, if you're smoking them, remember this. Remember this. If you're smoking e-cigarettes, and you think they're safe, you're probably wrong. Okay, that's what they're probably going to find. They may be more healthy than what you're smoking out of a regular cigarette. But they think they are still probably unhealthy to you, and now because our government is what it is, they're going to put childproof caps on them, because that right there is going to stop people from smoking them. Get out of here. What a bunch of stupid things. What a bunch of stupid things going on in the world today. Also, I wanted to ask you a question. Why do people fight the cops? And this may be a better question for Representative Mike Paul. Why in the world do people fight the cops? Has anyone out there ever been in a single situation where a law enforcement officer asked you, hey, come here, blah, 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 no matter what they said to you, where your response was something other than yes, sir, no, sir, blah, 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 where it actually ended up in your favor? I guess a professor was walking across the street. And she was jaywalking across the street at Arizona State University, black professor, so this is getting even more play than it would if it was, I don't know, a guy who looked like me walking across the street. There was a video, it's being called disturbing. The ASU professor was confronted by a police officer, who was, by the way, doing his job. When the professor resisted the officer's attempt to handcuff her, now, you do understand that that is a problem right there in itself. There are very few instances more dangerous for law enforcement and then coming in contact, obviously, with random people, being at a traffic stop or a stop on the street. You never know what they're going to do. So when those people resist being put in handcuffs, what are the cops supposed to do? Let them go? Oh, I didn't realize you were going to put up a fight here. Why don't you go? The video again being called disturbing. He then wrestles her to the ground, and while he's wrestling, her dress hiked up. Now again, she's the one who started it. It is his job at that point to resolve the situation, and her dress gets hiked up, and now we're supposed to all be offended that Dr. Ursula Orr had her nether region showed and her underwear showed. Get out of here. She was walking to the middle of the street because walkways had been obstructed due to construction. An officer interrogated her and asked her to see her ID on threat of arresting her if she didn't. Or scolded the officer for his disrespectful manner and talking. Does this not sound like that guy, Louis Gates? From the very beginning of Obama's presidency, you know, Officer Louis Gates? Or excuse me, Professor Louis Gates? Who was arrested in his home. He was claiming he was disrespected and all this other nonsense. She scolded the officer for his disrespectful manner in talking to her. And that's when things got heated. He told Orr to put her hands behind her back and said, I'm going to slam you on this car. She replied, you really want to do this? Do you see what I'm wearing? Do you see? When the officer wrestled her to the ground, her dress hiked up. And when she was lifted up, she kicked the officer in anger. So there you go. Now she kicked the cop. So now she has argued once and kicked the cop as well. Now, does anyone believe that this was going to end up positively for her? And why would you? Are you not insane? Are you not insane? If the cop asks you to do something, you do it. If you got a problem with it, you resolve that later. You're not going to win the initial confrontation. Why do people insist on doing this? And then when TV stations cover it, they cover it with these, oh, a disturbing video. Really? What's disturbing about it? An a-hole professor believing she's above the law because of who she is? Get out of here. He said, well, the reason I'm talking to you right now is because you are walking in the middle of the street. You are walking in the middle of the street. And the professor is claiming self-defense against law enforcement. But in less than a minute, the conversation quickly began to escalate. She started arguing with him. Has anyone ever argued their way out of a ticket? Has anyone ever argued their way out of a confrontation? Now listen, you know what I do when I get pulled over? When they come up to my car, I say, officer, here, I was speeding, here's my license, here's my registration. Those are the first two things I say. And 9 times out of 10, I will get away without getting a ticket. You know why? Because they are met with confrontation all the time. If you would just be respectful and nice, it will go a long way. And here they are showing it on television, showing her get slammed to the ground and kicking a cop. And now she's on CNN. Get out of here with this. If you fight with the cops, you're going to lose. If you fight with the cops, you're going to get taken down. Stop. And the media really has to stop. They really have to stop showing these people like they are somehow sympathetic. This woman is not sympathetic. She is not a sympathetic figure. She's the bad guy in this situation. Under all circumstances, if the cop is coming to you and saying to you, give me your ID, put your hands behind your back, I don't care how right you are, show him your ID and put your hands behind your back. Stop being stupid. And we have raised a society of people who think that cops can't do anything to them. And I'm telling you, that mentality is not a smart mentality to have. And if you fight with the cops, you are going to lose. Now, they have audio of people saying, hey, the police officers are getting way too aggressive with a young lady. So now they're playing those audio clips online. Folks, if you fight the cops, they are going to do everything in their power to put you down. Okay? And if that means slamming you on the ground, they're going to do it. Okay? Why are you fighting them? Stop it. It is absolutely ridiculous. They said that there was a racial motivation behind it. Of course there was. Because a black person's never been arrested by a cop unless that cop was a super racist. Unbelievable stuff. All right. 1-866-494-WVNN. 1-866-494-9866. Society will make this woman into a giant victim, and instead they should be making her into a giant fool. They should be saying to her, do what you're supposed to do. Stop being a dumbass. On with us right now, someone who's never been called a dumbass before, Conrad Thompson, First Family Mortgage. He's been called a great guy because he saves people money every single day, right, Conrad?
Ooh, what a heck of a transition, brother. I'm going to try to follow that as best I can. How's this sound? No house payments until October. We're going to help you celebrate your independence from house payments this week, and this is something we've never really done before. But this week only, we're offering a $500 gift card. Now, here's how this works. You start your loan this week, close by the end of August, and you'll have a lower monthly payment, no house payments until October, and an extra $500. We've sweetened the pot a little bit, but most importantly, we're going to show you how to pay your house off faster with cheaper monthly payments. This past Saturday, John Blumenberger in our Huntsville office found a way to save a police officer over $119,000. He had no idea he was overpaying. Are you overpaying? There's only one way to find out for sure. It's a quick 10-minute phone call on your ride to work. And you don't need perfect credit or money out of your pocket to get started. So what are you waiting for? Punch it in your phone. It's 425-0105.
There we go. Conrad Thompson, First Family Mortgage. Let that guy do what he's done for me. Put money in your pocket. Save you money on your mortgage. It's your biggest bill. He can save you the most. Give him a call. 425-0105. That's 425-0105. That's Conrad Thompson. That's First Family Mortgage. And check him out online at 1FMC.com. Remember, NMLS number 65084, an equal housing lender. 425-0105. That's 425-0105. Call Conrad Thompson. Call First Family Mortgage. And when you do, make sure you tell them Dale Jackson sent you.
This segment of the Dale Jackson Show is brought to you by our friends at First Family Mortgage. Let First Family Mortgage help you with your house by calling Conrad today at 425-0105.
All right, News Talk, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN News Time, 7:54 here on your Monday morning. Now, the more I hear from this story, the more I am amazed. And, you know, you got to love the press. You got to love the press. Because think about it. Let me ask you what the story is. Okay, story one. Woman arrested for jaywalking. Boring. That is a boring story. Nobody likes that story. All right, fine. Here's story two. Cop assaults woman. Okay, that's okay. Here's another one. Cop assaults college professor. Okay, all right, that's you're getting. I'm intrigued. Tell me more. All right, how about this one? Cop assaults black college professor. Okay, all right, now I'm interested. Let's get that woman on our show and have her talk about how this guy shouldn't have talked to her this way or that way or any of these things and demand respect and all this other stuff. And you'll notice I have a saying. If you have to ask for respect, you never, ever deserved it because you will get it immediately. If you start asking about it, I'm sorry, you're never going to get it. Let's go to the phones. If you argue with cops, you will lose. And that's it. There are no caveats. Nobody can tell me a story where they argued their way out of a ticket. And I'm not talking about talking your way out of a ticket. I'm talking about arguing your way into a ticket. That's like arguing your way into sex. And it just is not going to happen. You can argue your way out of it. And with a ticket, it's the other way around. You can probably argue your way into a ticket, but you ain't arguing your way out of it. Eric, Athens, you're on the Dale Jackson Show. What's going on?
Hey, Dale. How are you?
Pretty good.
All right. I haven't seen the video, but from what you're saying so far is that she was breaking the law, right?
Yep.
Doesn't matter what. Anything else is that she was breaking the law, which then makes it legal for the cops to ask for ID so that they could properly ticket you, right?
Correct.
And, you know, she can argue as much as she wants with the cops. That's what cops do. She's, you know, they're public service. They have to deal with that every day. And we have a right to argue and be pissy, and they have, you know, they have to deal with that. That's their job. But when you break the law, show your ID, you know, I mean, that's kind of the gist behind it. If you're not breaking the law, then you don't have to show your ID, and you can argue it till the cows come home, and you're within your rights to do so. So I have to say I agree with you. I think she's on the wrong end of the stick.
Correct. It is not like she was walking down the street minding her own business, and the cop's like, give me your ID. No, what happened was he walked up to her. He said to her, what are you doing walking in the middle of the street, blah, blah, blah. And she got kind of pissy with him. He said, oh, why don't you go ahead and show me your ID? And he's like, are you serious? And he said, either show me your ID, or I believe his exact words were, show me your ID or I'm going to put you on the car, or something along those lines. And she got pissy with him even more. And the minute he went to cuff her and she started resisting by pulling her hand back or jerking around, that's it. Game over, man. You're done. You're done. Because the cops aren't going to have you jerk. I guarantee you that never in the history of law enforcement, I may be speaking broadly here, but never in the history of law enforcement has a law enforcement officer tried to put a handcuff on someone and then jerk their hands away and that person not end up getting handcuffed. I doubt they jerked it. Oh, okay. You know what? This is more hassle than it's worth. I'll just go ahead and I'll let you go. And that is not how the game is played. She was walking in the middle of the road. An officer interrogated her, asked to see the ID on threat of arresting her. She called him disrespectful, said it's not going to happen. He said, put your hands behind your back or I'm going to slam you on the car. You really want to do that? Do you see what I'm wearing? Which, again, I don't understand. Newsflash, ladies, dresses. Wear dresses. Because apparently that's supposed to be a get-out-of-jail-free card. And the cop tries to give you an attitude, say, hey, do you not see what I'm wearing? Do you not see what I'm wearing here? And now we're supposed to feel bad because this professor's panties got seen by the world. Well, if you would have followed the rules and followed the law and done what you were supposed to do, you wouldn't have got wrestled. You probably wouldn't even have got a ticket. But if you act like a disrespectful fool, you're going to be treated like a disrespectful fool. You are not going to argue your way out of a ticket. You are never going to argue your way out of a ticket. If you have, I'd love to hear about it. Tell me how a cop came up to your car and you yelled at him and argued your way out of it. I would love to hear that. I don't think it's ever happened. I'd also love to hear the story about the guy who ripped his hands away while he was trying to be cuffed and didn't get slammed on the ground. Love to hear that. Love to hear that. Representative Mike Ball, former law enforcement. We'll talk to him about this when we come back. How many people did he let go who argued with him? Huh? How many people did he let go who jerked out of their, well, they're trying to put the handcuffs on? What does she think she was going to do? You should see the video. She starts, like, trying to get away. What, is she going to run away from these cops? Get out of here. Stay tuned. Don't be stupid. It's that simple.